All Business Media presents the Professionals Roundtable. Hear what's hot in the professional world. Timely topics to propel your career to the next level. Professionals Roundtable
with Rick Delgado.
Exclusively on All Business Media.
And welcome to All Business Media, where it is all business all the time. And I'm your host, Rick Delgado. And joining us on the show right now is a gentleman based out of New Orleans, Louisiana. He is an author as well as the owner of Logan Loomis LLC, doing consulting and coaching. You can reach out to him either by phone at 504-302-1346 or go to the website loganloomis.com. That's Logan Loomis is spelled L-O-O-M-I-S, loganloomis.com. I'm talking about my guest, the aforementioned Logan Loomis. Welcome to the program, and how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Rick. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, thank you for taking time out of your day to join us. Now, before we get started, do me a favor. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay, Rick. Well, a little bit about myself. Started my career as a lawyer with a large New Orleans law firm and went in-house with one of our clients and ended up on the business side. It was a natural gas marketing company and ended up leading sales and marketing for that group, which we built into an Inc. 100 company. And then I was asked to develop a company and lead a company as CEO in that industry. And when the industry changed radically, I left the industry and started what I've been doing for the last 20 years, which is my management consultancy, a lot of executive coaching, and focusing a lot on helping companies create value and profit.
All right. And now you've also, because I mentioned you're an author as well.
I am.
So are we talking about both sides win?
No, we're actually going to, I think, talk about getting the people equation right.
Oh, okay. The second one on your page here. Sorry
That's
about
exactly
that.
That's exactly right. Yeah,
because I know you got two.
I do have two, but I thought today we'd focus on getting the people equation right.
All right, so let's focus on that one. Again, we're talking with Logan Loomis. He's an author as well as consulting and coaching expert. And you can find out more about him on his website, loganloomis.com. So now about the book, Getting the People Equation Right. Tell us about that. Why did you write the book?
You know, as I said, Rick, in my work I focus a lot on value creation because value is the key to generating profit in business. And, you know, we pay for value.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very common for leaders to say that people are their most important asset. And that's true because it's the people who create the value. You know, it's the people on the field who score the points.
Right.
So getting the people, getting the right people in the right jobs, doing the right things, is essential for the creation of value, and that drives the profit that's the lifeblood of any organization. You know, it's that simple, and it's that hard.
Right.
The problem with many organizations is they're just not very good at it. And you know, Peter Drucker, who is popularly viewed as the father of modern management, said something that's always stuck with me. The ability to make good hiring decisions regarding people represents one of the last sources of competitive advantage, since very few organizations are very good at it. And the truth of this, Rick, was made graphically clear to me when one of my clients got me involved in making what was an important hire for them.
Okay.
And it was a division of the company. It was underperforming. They needed somebody with vision, a lot of energy, a lot of passion. And so he tapped me and three very experienced business people on his board and himself, and we were going to be the selection committee.
Right.
And we interviewed a number of candidates, and there was this one candidate. And, you know, we all liked him. He was charismatic. He had a lot of vision, a lot of passion. He had generated some good operating profit. You know, we thought, this is the guy.
Right.
And so the CEO hired him, and things went downhill very, very quickly. And so I'm having dinner with the CEO, and he's saying, you know, he's alienated his staff. I've talked to him about having to change. He's not changing. I'm going to have to let him go. And, you know, that was really discouraging for me. And so I left the restaurant, got in my car, and it was one of those nights that I still remember. You know, it was chilly and it was rainy and just kind of bad dinner. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, as I said, Rick, I practiced law for the better part of 10 years. And I'm thinking, you know, I know And I've been trained on how to legally let somebody go.
Right.
But I don't have any sense of what you have to do to really get the right person in the right job. And so I set out to learn how to do that. And that was really the genesis of the book.
Right. So now what did you learn?
Well, I learned that there are basically three components of a good hiring decision.
Okay.
The first is eligibility. Someone's skill, their experience, their education, everything that you see, Rick, on the resume. And the second is likability. You know, and likability is important. And it's also one of the big pitfalls that I've discovered in hiring. And because of something that is called the halo effect. And the halo effect is a classic finding in social psychology, and, you know, it was identified back in the 1920s. And it happens when one good aspect of a candidate, you know, like we like them, we think they have this good quality.
Right.
And that makes the candidate look good in all kinds of other areas. You know, we begin to attribute all these positive qualities to somebody, even though we don't have any specific information. You know, we basically fall into like because we like them, of course. You know, because we like Rick, of course he's going to be able to do all this stuff. So, you know, we form like or dislike almost immediately. And it's important that we like somebody, but it's equally important that we avoid the halo effect. And to do that, we need data. And we need data on a person's suitability for the job. And suitability is the third component. And it's the traits, the natural inclinations, qualities that a person has that support success in the particular job. So,
right.
For instance.
Go ahead, Rick. No, go ahead.
So if you have a job
that
requires somebody to pay a lot of attention to detail, it requires a lot of precision, you certainly want somebody who's going to have a natural inclination to do that, right?
Right.
And if you don't, it's going to be a challenge. So if you have a job that needs a lot of attention to detail and you want somebody who's precise, you're definitely not going to hire me. However, that's exactly what I intend for the better part of 10 years because as a lawyer, I did attention to detail work 10 hours a day, and I am not attentive to detail. I just happen to be very highly self-motivated, so I did it, but I didn't enjoy doing it. And when I had the opportunity to go and lead a sales team in business, you know, I jumped at that opportunity. And I love what I do. I've loved what I've done for the last 25 years, so different than the first part of my career. And so really helping people get into the right jobs and avoid some of the kind of drudgery that I spent is something I really care passionately about.
Right. So and what you're talking about right there, Logan, is something I think a lot of us fall into. It's like we get a job and we're doing it and we're good at it, but it's not our passion. We're not jazzed to be doing it. But for some reason, we have the talent and people like us and we're getting the job done. You know, so we stick with it, and it usually comes later on where, like you said, you jumped at the opportunity to get out of doing something that you didn't like to do.
Absolutely.
So now, when you're talking about suitability, that seems to be very subjective. So how do you get the data for someone to be, you know, on suitability?
That's a great question, Rick. You know, and I struggled with that because when I started looking at how you get data, most of the assessments that I found were, and I think most of the assessments that are out there are basically personality assessments that they're trying to retrofit for jobs. And they're really good if you want to talk about team dynamics, but to find the concrete suitability data that I was looking for, it just wasn't there. And then I found an assessment called the Harrison Assessment. And the Harrison Assessment is a behavioral assessment.
Okay.
And it's built from the job up, and it measures 175 traits that can go into job performance. And then what I find really important about it is it identifies the specific traits out of those 175 that support success in a particular job. I think of it like muscles in the body. We all have all of the traits, and we all use all of them. We may not enjoy using them, but we all have all of them. But
right. There's
a specific set of muscles that or traits that really support success in a particular job. And so being able to identify those traits, those muscles, and see how strong people are in them has really been a game changer for my clients.
Right.
And I'll give you an example.
Okay.
One of my clients was recently hiring a sales rep. And there was a candidate who had good eligibility, you know, just what you were talking about, could do the job, and had some track record. And they liked him. When we got the assessment data back, you know, I had a concern. The sales cycle for that company is fairly long. And most of the successful reps have the ability to nudge a buyer, but not push the buyer.
Right.
So in looking at the candidate's data, I was concerned that he would tend to push too hard for the sale and burn the relationship. So the hiring manager started putting out feelers to see if that was the case, you know, doing some reaching out to some people he knew in the industry. And he started getting feedback that the candidate did, in fact, tend to have a reputation of being pretty pushing too hard.
Right.
And he had burned some relationships. So that really avoided the risk of that.
Yeah.
And that's why, in my experience, you need data.
Right.
All right. Well, you know what? Again, we're talking with our guest. His name is Logan Loomis. He is the owner of Logan Loomis LLC Consulting and Coaching, but he's also an author. That's what we're talking about right now. We're talking about he's got two books, of which you can go check out on his website. Both Sides Win is one of them, but today we're talking about getting the people equation right, how to get the right people in the right jobs and keep them. It's a book that's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble as well. You can click on right on the right-hand side of his website. You'll see blogs and books. Click on books, scroll down to that Getting the People Equation Right tab, and then you can click on either Amazon or Barnes & Noble and purchase it through that. We got to take a quick break right here, Logan, but let me remind people, go to the website, loganloomis.com, or reach out to him at 504-302-1346. We'll pick up our conversation after this quick break right here on All Business Media.
All Business Media presents the Professionals Roundtable. Hear what's hot in the professional world. Timely topics to propel your career to the next level. Professionals Roundtable with Rick Delgado, exclusively on All Business Media.
And welcome back to All Business Media. And yes, I am your host, Rick Delgado, sitting with our guest, Logan Loomis. He is also the owner at Logan Loomis LLC. He's an author based out of New Orleans, Louisiana. He's also a consultant and a coach. Reach out to him at 504-302-1346 or loganloomis.com. That is his website. And again, Logan, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Rick.
Yeah, we're discussing his book called Getting the People Equation Right, How to Get the Right People in the Right Jobs and Keep Them. In the first part, we covered the getting the right people part, right?
We did, Rick.
Because you talked about, you know, figuring out who the best person is, getting the data to back up your decision on bringing that person in or those people in. And now I guess the second part would be how to keep them.
Yeah. And, you know, you get the right people in. It's clear they can do the job.
Right.
And then the big question is, will they do the job for you? You know, there's a lot of research now that confirms something that I think we all know, because we've all probably had good bad bosses and bad bosses, and
right.
That's that we don't leave companies, we leave managers.
Right.
And the last thing that you want to do is have your managers not engage the people who you've spent so much time and energy on getting onto your team. And, you know, it's a big difference if you're a manager that can really motivate and engage somebody. I was listening to somebody recently who was saying that, they had a great boss, and he said, you know, I probably would have cleaned that guy's toilet if he had asked me to. that's the level of management that we want, you know. And by contrast, you know, we don't want somebody to sing that old David Allen Coe song, you know, take this job and shove it.
Right. Now, how do you avoid making that mistake of, you know, kind of bringing in the wrong person and then, you know, kind of affects everything?
Well, you know, there are several managerial competencies that I discuss in the book. And really when it kind of breaks down, it's tapping into the things that motivate us as human beings. You know, for instance, you know, we all have a need to be heard. We all have a need to be appreciated.
Right.
And one of the most impactful things that I found in creating engagement is appreciation. And, you know, appreciation is so powerful, and it's free, which is awesome. And at the same time, I think most of the listeners are going to probably concur with this, rare in companies. And, in fact, there was a massive study done that said that 65% of the people surveyed said they had not been recognized in the entire last year.
Right.
And so it's the lack of appreciation that is one of the major reasons that that people quit.
Mm-hmm. Now let me ask you this, because from what I'm gleaning, not only from what you're saying, but I guess from my own personal experience there, Logan, is a lot of this is relationships, right?
It's just a lot of relationships.
And unfortunately, like you mentioned in the earlier part of our conversation, where, you know, you all kind of, you fell in like with the guy and you thought this guy was going to be great, turned out not to be the right person for the job. So when you're bringing somebody in, how do you know that they're going to, you know, be that person that's going to, you know, give the people that are going to be working under them the appreciation? I mean, why do you think there is a lack of appreciation?
Well, it's I've asked myself the same question, Rick, and I've concluded that one reason that managers tend to lack appreciation or lack expressing appreciation is because they treat their employees like they treat themselves. Let me explain that.
Okay.
In the years of Harrison assessment data that I've had on high achievers, and as I said, that's the instrument I use to define suitability, I've noticed a trend in many, and actually in most high achievers, they tend to be hypercritical of themselves. It's actually something that I work with in the high-achieving executives that I coach as an executive coach. And it tends to be part of what many high achievers, most high achievers, assume is a success model. You know, I found that over the years that all behavior is positively motivated, often very misguided, you know, often very stupid. We do things that are stupid, but we're doing them for a positive reason. We don't want to do it just because we think it's going to get a bad outcome.
Mm-hmm.
We actually believe it's going to get a good outcome. And one of the success models I've seen in high achievers is, if I beat myself up, if I focus on where I need to improve constantly, I'm going to do better. And there's some validity in that. But at the same time, a more balanced approach of also focusing on what's going well is impactful. And, you know, I think of it intuitively, you know, when we see a child walk for the first time.
Right.
You know, what do? We get excited. We encourage them. You know, I've asked this question countless times, and I've never gotten the answer that anybody has gone up to a baby that's walked for the first time. You know, the child takes 3 steps and falls on his or her bum, and we get all excited, mm-hmm. and nobody goes up and says, "Now listen, you only took 3 steps and you fell on your bum. You're going to have to get this balance thing down. You're going to have to focus on this balancing, because if you don't, you're not going to walk. If you don't walk, you're not going to run. And just let me tell you, sports and dance are going to be completely out, so you need to hunker down and get this walking thing done." You know, that's not what we naturally do.
Right.
We naturally look at, "Oh, you did this, and we encourage him to do more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's now a good body of research called appreciative inquiry out there that is showing that if we focus on what people are doing well and how to repeat it, that's actually more significant in a profit driver than focusing on correcting our problems. And as I said, we're all going to do a balance of that. But if you can get people to begin to pause and focus on what is going well, then naturally appreciation comes out. You know, if I'm looking for what's going well, then I'll say, "Oh, that is going well." And I found with appreciation, there's 2 types of appreciation. One is to appreciate the performance, which is important. But the other is to appreciate the qualities. You know, you've hired the people for these qualities,
right,
and to appreciate it when you see them evidenced in their work. You know, for instance, let's go back to precise. If you hire somebody who is highly attentive to detail and they're very thorough, and you know, you might say to them, "Hey, you know, one thing I really appreciate about you is that you are so thorough. You are so attentive to detail. I never have to worry about there being anything that you haven't checked in this." So, you know, and if you think about that, if somebody tells you that, doesn't it make you feel good, Rick?
Oh, yeah. And you're not even talking to me.
And I'm not even talking to you, and you're already feeling good. So you know, it creates a whole new positive performance.
Logan, I was just about to say, well, thank you. You don't even know me that well, but thank you.
But, yeah, so, you know, and so... So I think that when we can see that, and I see this more and more all the time in companies, and with a lot of people I work with, I ask them to do a 21-day challenge.
Okay.
And the challenge is to, at the end of the day, focus on three things that went well today. It could be small, large, whatever, but find three things that went well today and just get the habitual look at what went well. And it's a 21-day challenge because it takes 21 days to deliver a habit.
Right.
So if you pick a specific time and focus, and most people get in there, have a commute, and they get in their car, and you have to do this, and look at three things that went well. And I actually had a kind of amusing story recently. One of the guys I coach, he's the general manager of a company, called me and said, "Logan, I have a bone to pick with you."
Okay.
And I said, "What is that, Dean?" And he said, "I had a terrible day yesterday. And I got in my car, and I was ready to wallow in just, I mean, let me tell you, it was a terrible day."
Right.
"And because I now had the habit of picking out three things that went well, I couldn't help myself. I had to look at three things that went well." And I said, "What happened?" He goes, "Then I felt better." And I said, "And that's bad." And he said, "Yes, because I want to wallow in it." And I said, "Well, do you want me to give you a hug and say, poor boo-boo? I mean, I'm happy to do that."
Right.
And he goes, "But the worst is, when I got home, my wife said, 'How was your day?' And I couldn't say it was terrible. I had to say, 'Well, it could have gone better. There were some good things, but they were all, you know." And he right. goes, "I got no sympathy." I said, "Well, I'll give you sympathy. So, poor boo-boo." But you know, it's getting that sense of shifting to being able to have a more balanced view.
Right.
And then appreciation naturally will flow from that, is my experience.
Yeah, and people do respond to appreciation. I mean, it's one of those things. It's one of those things that's inside of us. Like you mentioned, you did it to me. You weren't even talking to me, but you said, "Don't you feel better?" I'm like, "Yeah, I do." Again, we're talking with our guest, Logan Loomis. He is the owner at Logan Loomis LLC Consulting and Coaching. Talking about his
book. Well, and Rick, let me just tell you, you're a great interviewer.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, you know what? You're a great guest.
The way you
prepared.
Now we're both feeling appreciated, and we're feeling really good.
Yeah, and the way you prepared, of course, is way more than anybody else usually does. So thank you for doing that. The name of the book, Getting the People Equation Right, you can find it on Amazon.com. It's called Getting the People Equation Right, How to Get the Right People in the Right Jobs and Keep Them. Hey, just to conclude here, Logan, being that you're an accomplished professional, what quote or word of inspiration, besides the one you've already offered me, can you give to everybody else to help them follow their dreams?
Well, you know, I love people following their dreams and having aspirations and breaking through what I think of as the yeah buts in life. Mm. And there's a quote by Roger Bannister. And Roger Bannister is the guy who broke the 4-minute mile. And that was significant because at the time he broke the 4-minute mile, scientists and doctors said that a human being could not run faster than 4 minutes, that if you did, your organs would explode, you know,
right.
you would die.
Yeah.
And so Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile. And then, of course, because he had broken that limiting belief, countless people have broken that since. And actually, within 45 days, people were breaking the 4-minute mile. But he said something that I love, and I often end my keynotes with this, and it's that no one can say, "You must not run faster than this or jump higher than that." The human spirit is indomitable.
Wow. Yeah, you know what? And being a runner myself growing up, I knew the story of Bannister, but I did not realize that quote. So thank you for sharing that with us.
And I'm glad your organs didn't explode.
Yeah,
Rick.
And they didn't. It's amazing. And now I race a bike, I go even faster than that, and my organs still don't explode. Hey,
we're glad because we want you back, Rick.
Yeah, and we'd like you back as well. Hey, before we wrap this up, how can people get the book and get in touch with you directly, Logan?
Again, books available on Amazon, other booksellers online, and my contact information is go to my website, loganloomis.com.
Yeah, loganloomis.com, or you can reach out to him by phone at 504-302-1346. Logan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rick.
Great stuff.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll be back with more on All Business Media right after these words.